Concession to femininity was the narrow skirt instead of pants, and the rich wine color of the wool. "Sit," she said, as if she were talking to a poodle, and the roomful of vampires sat. She never looked away from me. "How kind of you to make an appearance," she said, her abyss-dark eyes cold with power. Only Warren's warmth allowed me to answer her with anything approaching calm. "How kind of you to issue your invitations in advance so I could be on time," I said. Perhaps not wisely, but hey, she already hated me. I could smell it. She stared at me a moment.
"It makes a joke," she said.
"It is rude," I returned, taking a step to the side. If I got her mad enough to attack me, I didn't want Warren to take the hit. It was only when I stepped around him that I realized I was meeting her gaze. Stupid. Even Samuel wasn't proof against the power of her eyes. But I couldn't look down, not with Adam's power rising to choke me. I wasn't just a coyote here. I was the alpha of the Columbia Basin Pack's mate. Because he said so, and because I said so. If I looked down, I was acknowledging her superiority, and I wouldn't do that. So I met her eyes, and she chose to allow me to do so. She lowered her eyelids, not so far as to lose our informal staring contest, but to veil her expression. "I think," she said in a voice so soft that only Warren and I heard her, "I think that had we met in a different place and time, I could have liked you." She smiled, her fangs showing, "or killed you."
"Enough games," she said louder. "Call him for me."
I froze. That's why she wanted me. She wanted Stefan back. For a moment, all I could see was the blackened dead thing that she dropped in my living room. I remembered how long it had taken me to realize who it was. She'd done that to him, and now she wanted him back. Not if I could help it. Adam hadn't moved from where he'd been standing, telling the room he trusted me to take care of myself. I wasn't sure he really thought so. I knew I didn't, but he needed me to stand on my own 2 feet.
"Call whom?" he asked.
She smiled at him without looking away from me.
"Didn't you know? Your mate belongs to Stefan."
He laughed, an oddly happy sound in this dirge-shadowed room. It was a good excuse to turn my back on Marsilia and quit playing the stare game. Turning my back meant that I didn't lose, only that the contest was over. I tried not to let the sick fear I felt show on my face. I tried to be what Adam and Stefan needed me to be.
"Like a coyote, Mercy is adaptable," Adam told Marsilia. "She belongs to whom she decides. She belongs everywhere she wants to, for just as long as she wants to."
He made it sound like a good thing. Then he said,
"I thought this was about preventing war."
"It is," said Marsilia. "Call Stefan." I lifted my chin and glanced at her over my shoulder. "Stefan is my friend," I told her. "I won't bring him to his execution."
"Admirable," she told me briskly. "But your concern is misplaced. I can promise that he won't be hurt physically by me or by mine tonight."
I slanted a glance at Warren, and he nodded. Vampires might be hard to read, but he was better at sensing lies than I was, and his nose agreed with mine. She was being truthful. "Or hold him here," I said. The smell of her hatred had died away, and I couldn't tell anything about how she felt.
"Or hold him here," she agreed. "Witness!"
"Witnessed," said the vampires. All of them. All at exactly the same time, like puppets, only creepier. She waited. Finally, she said,
"I mean him no harm."
I thought of earlier tonight, when he turned down Bernard, even though I was pretty sure he agreed with Bernard's assessment of her continued rule of the seethe. In the end, he loved her more than he loved his seethe, his menagerie of sheep, or his own life. "You harm him by your continued existence," I told her as quietly as I could, and she flinched. I thought about that flinch, and about the way she'd let him live, even though he, of all her vampires, had reason to see her dead, and had the means to do so. Maybe Stefan wasn't the only one who loved. It hadn't kept her from torturing him, though. I closed my eyes, trusting Warren, trusting Adam to keep me safe. I only wished I could keep Stefan safe, but I knew what he would want me to do. "Stefan," I called, just as I had earlier, because I knew he would want me to. Surely he knew where I was calling from and would come ready to protect himself. Nothing happened. "No, Stefan." I looked toward Marsilia and shrugged. "I called," I told her. "But he doesn't have to come when I call." It didn't seem to bother her. She just nodded, a surprisingly businesslike gesture from a woman who would have looked more at home in a Renaissance gown of silk and jewels than she did in her modern suit. "Then I call this meeting to order," she said, strolling to the old throne-like chair in the center of the room. "First, I would call Bernard to the chair." He came, reluctant and stiff. I recognized the pattern of his movement. He looked like a wolf called against his will. I knew he wasn't of her making, but she had power over him just the same. He was still wearing the clothes I'd last seen him in. The harsh overhead fluorescent lights glinted off the small balding spot on the top of his head. He sat unwillingly.
"Here, caro, let me help."
Marsilia took each hand and impaled it on the upthrust brass thorns. He fought. I could see it in the grimness of his face and the tenseness of his muscles. I couldn't see that it cost Marsilia anything at all to keep him under control.
"You've been naughty, no?" she asked. "Disloyal."
"I have not been disloyal to the Seethe," he gritted out.
"Truth," said a boy's voice. The wizard himself. I hadn't seen him, though I'd looked. His light gold hair had been trimmed close to his skull. He had a vague smile on his face as he strolled down from the top of the bleachers across from us. He used the bleacher seats as stairs. He looked like a young high school student. He died before his features had had a chance to grow into maturity. He looked soft and young. Marsilia smiled when she saw him. He hopped over the last three seats and landed lightly on the hardwood floor. She was shorter than he was, but the kiss he gave her made my stomach hurt. I knew he was hundreds of years old, but it didn't matter, because he looked like a kid. He stepped back and reached out a finger and ran it over Bernard's hand and down to the chair arm. When he picked it up, it dripped blood. He licked it off slowly, letting a few drops roll down the palm of his hand over his wrist until it stained the light green sleeves of his dress shirt. I wondered who he was performing for. Surely the vampires wouldn't be bothered by his licking blood, and I was sort of right, but mostly wrong. Bothered might not be the word, but there was a generalized motion from the stands as vampires leaned forward, and some of them even licked their lips. Ugh.
"You have betrayed me, haven't you, Bernard?"
Marsilia was still looking at Wolf, and he held out his hand. She took it and traced the drying blood, letting her mouth linger over his wrist, while Bernard quivered, trying not to answer the question.
"I have not betrayed the Seethe," Bernard said again.
And though she grilled him for 10 minutes or more, that was all he would say. Stefan appeared beside me. His eyes were on the sleeve of his white dress shirt as he casually fixed a cufflink. Then he pulled the sleeve of his subtly pinstriped gray suit over it with a just-right tug. He looked at me, and Marsilia looked at him. She waved her hand at Bernard.
"Get up. Wolf, put him somewhere obvious, would you?"
Shaking and stumbling, Bernard rose, his hands dripping on the pale floor all the way to the stands, where Wolf cleared out space on the bottom tier of seats for them both. He began cleaning Bernard's hands, like a cat licking ice cream. Stefan didn't say anything, just ran his eyes over me in a quick survey. Then he looked at Adam, who nodded regally back, though he smiled a little, and I realized that he and Stefan were wearing the same thing, except that Adam wore a dark blue shirt. Mary Jo saw the resemblance and grinned. She turned to say something to Paul, I thought, when a surprised look came over her face, and she just dropped. Alec caught her before she hit the floor, as if this wasn't the first time she'd done something like that. Leftovers from the close brush with death, I hoped, not something the vampires were doing. Stefan left me for Mary Jo. He touched her throat, ignoring Alec's silent snarl.
"Relax," Stefan told the wolf. "She will take no harm from me." "She's been doing that a lot," Adam told him.
That he didn't step between his vulnerable pack member and the vampire was an unsubtle message.
"She's waking up," Stefan said just before her eyes fluttered open.
And only after Mary Jo was clearly awake did Stefan look at Marsilia.
"Come to the chair, soldier," she told him.
He stared at her for so long that I wondered if he would do it. He might love her, but he didn't like her very much at the moment, and, I hoped, didn't trust her either. But he patted Mary Jo's knee and walked out to where Marsilia waited for him.
"Wait," she told him before he sat down.
She looked at the stands across from us where the vampires and their food sat.
"Do you want me to question Estelle first? Would that make you happier?"
I couldn't tell who she was speaking to.
"Fine," she said. "Bring Estelle here."
A door I hadn't noticed opened on the far side of the room, and Lily, the gifted pianist and quite insane vampire who never left the seethe and Marsilia's protection, came in carrying Estelle like a new groom carried his bride over the threshold. Lily was even dressed in a frothy white mass of lace that could have been a wedding dress to Estelle's dark suit, though I'd never seen a bride with blood all over her face and down her gown. If I were a vampire, I think I'd only wear black or dark brown to hide the stains. Estelle hung limp in Lily's arms, and her neck looked like a pack of hyenas had been chewing on her.
"Lily," Marsilia chided, "haven't I told you about playing with your food?"
Lily's sapphire eyes glittered with a hungry iridescence visible even in the overly brightly lit room.
"Sorry," she said. She skipped a couple of steps. "Sorry, Stelle."
She smiled whitely at Stefan. Then she plopped Estelle's limp form on the chair, like a doll. She moved Estelle's head so it wasn't flopped to the side, then straightened her skirt.
"Is that good?"
"Fine. Now be a good girl and go sit next to Wolf, please."
Lily had been in her 30s, I thought, when she was killed, but her mind had stopped developing far earlier. She smiled brightly and skipped over to Wolf and bounced down to the seat beside him. He patted her knee, and she put her head on his shoulder. As with Bernard, Marsilia stuck Estelle's hands on the thorns. The limp vampire came to shrieking, screaming life as soon as her second hand was pierced. Marsilia allowed it for a minute, then said, "Stop!" in a voice that fired like a 22. It popped, but didn't thunder. Estelle froze mid-scream.
"Did you betray me?" Marsilia asked.
Estelle jerked, shook her head frantically.
"No, no, no, never!"
Marsilia looked at Wolf. He shook his head.
"If you control her enough to keep her on the chair, mistress, she can't answer with truth."
"And if I don't, all she does is a scream."
She looked into the bleachers.
"As I told you, you can try it yourself if you choose, no?"
She pulled Estelle's hands off the chair.
"Go sit by Wolf, Estelle."
A Hispanic man came to his feet on one of the seats behind me. He had a tear tattooed just below one eye, and he, like Wolf, hopped down to the floor via the seats, though without Wolf's grace. It was more as if he fell slowly down the bleachers, landing on hands and knees on the unforgiving floor.
"Estelle, Estelle," he moaned, brushing by me.
He was human. One of her sheep, I thought. Marsilia raised an eyebrow, and a vampire followed Estelle's human at three or four times his speed. He caught up to him before the man had made it halfway across the floor. The vampire had the appearance of a very elderly man. He looked as though he died of old age before being made a vampire, though there was nothing old or shaky in the hold he kept on the struggling man.
"What would you have me do, mistress?"
the old man said.
"I would have had you not allow him to interrupt us here," Marsilia said.
I glanced at Warren, who frowned. She was lying then. I thought so. This was part of the script. After a thoughtful moment, Marsilia said,
"Kill him."
There was a snap, and the man dropped to the ground, and every vampire in the place who had been breathing stopped. Estelle fell to the ground 4 or 5 feet from Wolf. I glanced away and unexpectedly caught Marsilia staring at me. She wanted me dead. I could see it in the hungry look she had. But she had more pressing business just now. Marsilia gestured at the chair in invitation to Stefan.
"Please accept my apologies for the delay."
Stefan stared at her. If there was an emotion on his face, I couldn't read it. He'd taken a step forward, and she stopped him once again.
"No, wait. I have a better idea."
She looked at me.
"Mercedes Thompson, come let us partake of your truth. Witness for us the things you have seen and heard."
I folded my arms, not in outright refusal, but I didn't go waltzing over either. This was Marsilia's show, but I wouldn't let her have the upper hand completely. Warren's hand closed over my shoulder, a show of support, I thought, or maybe he was trying to warn me.
"You will do as I say, because you want me to stop hurting your friends," she purred. "The wolves are more worthy targets, but there is that delicious policeman, Tony, isn't it? And the boy who works for you. He has such a big family, doesn't he? The children are so fragile."
She looked at Estelle's man, dead almost at her feet. Stefan stared at her, then looked at me, and once I saw his eyes, I knew the emotion he was trying to hold back. Rage.
"You sure?" I asked him.
He nodded.
"Come."
I wasn't happy about doing it, but she was right. I wanted my friends safe. I sat on the chair and scooted forward until my arms wouldn't be stretched out trying to reach the sharp brass. I slammed both hands down and tried not to wince as the thorns bit deep, or gasp as magic pulsed in my ears.
"Yum," said Wolf,
and I nearly jerked my hands away again. Could he taste me through the thorns, or was he just trying to harass me?
"I sent Stefan to you," Marsilia said. "Will you tell our audience what he looked like?"
I looked at Stefan, and he nodded. So I described the wizened thing that had fallen to my floor as closely as I could remember it, working to keep my voice impersonal rather than angry or anything else inappropriate.
"Truth," said Wolf when I finished.
"Why was he in that state?" Marsilia asked.
Stefan nodded, so I answered her. "Because he tried to save my life by covering up my involvement in Andre's death? Destruction? What do you call it when a vampire is killed permanently?" The skin on her face thinned until I could see the bones beneath. And she was even more beautiful, more terrible in her rage.
"Dead," she said.
"Truth," said Wolf.
"Stefan tried to cover up your involvement in Andre's death."
He looked around.
"I helped cover it up, too. It seemed the thing to do at the time, though I later repented and confessed."
"There are crossed bones on the door of your home," Marsilia said.
"My shop," I answered, "and yes."
"Did you know," she said, "that no vampire except Stefan can go into your shop? It is your home as much as that ratty trailer in Finley is."
Why had she told me that? Stefan was watching her, too.
"Tell our audience the why of the bones."
"Betrayal," I said, "or so I am told. You asked me to kill one monster, and I chose to kill two."
"Truth," said Wolf.
"When did Stefan know you were a walker, Mercedes Thompson?"
"The first time I met him," I told her. "Almost 10 years ago."
"Truth," said Wolf.
She looked toward the bleachers again and addressed someone there.
Remember that?
She turned to stare at me, then glanced at Stefan as she asked me, Why did you kill Andre? Because he knew how to build sorcerers, demon-possessed. He'd done it once, and you and he planned on doing it again. People died for his games, and more people would die for yours, both of yours.
Truth, said Wolf. What care we how many people die?
Asked Marsilia, waving at the dead man and speaking to everyone here.
They are short-lived, and they are food.
She'd meant it rhetorically, but I answered her anyway. They are many, and they could destroy your seed in a day if they knew it existed. It would take them a month to wipe all of you out of existence in this country. And if you were creating monsters like that thing Andre brought into existence, I would help them. I leaned forward as I spoke. My hands throbbed in time with my heartbeat, and I found that the rhythm of my words followed the pain.
Truth, said Wolf in a satisfied tone.
Marsilia put her mouth near my ear.
That was for my soldier,
she murmured in tones that reached no farther than my ears.
Tell him that.
She lowered her mouth until it hovered over my neck, but I didn't flinch.
I do think I would have liked you, Mercedes, she said, if you weren't what you are, and I wasn't what I am.
You are Stefan's sheep?
We exchanged blood twice, I said.
Truth, said Wolf, sounding amused.
You belong to him.
You would think so, I agreed. She let out a huff of exasperation.
You make this simple thing difficult.
You make it difficult. I understand what you are asking, though, and the answer is yes.
Truth.
Why did Stefan make you his?
I didn't want to tell her. I didn't want her to know I had any connection to Blackwood whatsoever, though probably Adam had already told her. So I attacked.
Because you murdered his menagerie, the people he cared about, I said hotly.
Truth, Stefan ground out.
Truth, agreed Wolf softly. Marsilia, her face angled toward me, looked obscurely satisfied.
I have what I need of you, Ms. Thompson. You may vacate the chair.
I pulled my hands off the chair and tried not to wince or relax as the uncomfortable pulse of magic left me. Before I could get up, Stefan's hand was under my arm, lifting me to my feet. His back was to Marsilia, and all his attention seemed to be on me, though I had the feeling that all of his being was focused on his former mistress. He took one of my hands in both of his and raised it to his mouth, licking it clean with gentle thoroughness. If we hadn't been in public, I'd have told him what I thought of that. I thought he caught a little of it in my face, because the corners of his mouth turned up. Marsilia's eyes flashed red.
You overstep yourself.
It was Adam, but it didn't sound like him. I turned and saw him stride over the floor of the room without making a noise. If Marsilia's face had been frightening, it was nothing compared to his. Stefan, undeterred, had picked up my other hand and treated it the same way, though he was a little more brisk about it. I didn't jerk it away because I wasn't sure he'd let me, and the struggle would light Adam's fuse for sure.
I heal her hands, Stefan said, releasing me and stepping back, as is my privilege.
Adam stopped next to me. He picked up my hands, which did look better, and gave Stefan a short, sharp nod. He tucked my hand around his upper arm, then returned with me to the wolves. I could feel in the pounding of his heart, in the tightness of his arm, that he was on the edge of losing it. So I dropped my head against his arm to muffle my voice. Then I said,
That was all aimed at Marsilia.
When we get home, said Adam, not bothering to speak quietly, you will allow me to enlighten you about how something can accomplish more than one purpose at the same time.
Marsilia waited until we were seated with the rest of the wolves before she continued her program for the evening.
And now for you, she said to Stefan. I hope you have not reconsidered your cooperation.
In answer, Stefan sat on the throne-like chair, raised both hands over the sharp thorns, and slammed them down with such force that I could hear the chair groan from where I stood.
What do you wish to know?
He asked.
Your feeder told us that I killed your former menagerie, she said. How do you know it to be true?
He lifted his chin.
I felt each of them die by your hand, one a day, until they were no more.
Truth, agreed Wolf in a tone I hadn't heard from him before. It made me look. He sat with Estelle collapsed at his feet, Lily leaning against one side, and Bernard sitting stiffly on the other. Wolf's face was somber and sad.
You are no longer of this seed.
I am no longer of this seed, Stefan agreed coolly.
Truth, said Wolf.
You were never mine, really, she told him. You had always your free will.
Always, he agreed.
And you used that to hide a mercy from me, from justice.
I hid her from you because I judged her no risk to you or the seed.
Truth, murmured Wolf.
You hid her because you liked her.
Yes,
agreed Stefan.
And because there would be no justice in her death. She had not killed one of us, and would not, except that you set that task to her.
For the first time since he sat in the chair, he looked directly at her.
You asked her to kill the monster you could not find, and she did it. Twice.
Truth.
She killed André!
Marsilia's voice rose to a roar, and power echoed in it and through the room we were in. The lights dimmed a little, then regained their former wattage. Stefan smiled sourly at her.
Because there was no choice. We left her no choice. You, I, and André.
Truth. You chose her over me, Marsilia said,
and her power lit the air with strangeness. I took a step closer to Adam and shivered.
You knew she hunted André, knew she'd killed him, and you hid what she did from me. You forced me to torture you and destroy your power base. You must answer to me.
Her voice thundered, vibrating the floor and rattling the walls. The suspended lights drifted back and forth, making shadows play.
Not anymore, said Stefan. I do not belong to you.
Truth, snapped Wolf, suddenly coming to his feet. That is fair truth. You felt it yourself. Across from us, high in the bleachers, a vampire stood up. He had soft features, wide-spaced eyes, and an upturned nose that should have made him look something other than vampire. Like Wolf and Estelle's human, he strode down the seats. But there was no bounce to his step or hesitation. His path might as well have been straight and paved for all it impeded him. He landed on the floor and walked to Wolf. He wore a tuxedo and a pair of dark metal gauntlets, hinged metal on the top and chain link below. He flexed his fingers, and blood dripped from the gloves to the floor. No one made any move to clean it up. He turned, and in a light, breathy voice he said,
"Accepted. He is no man of yours, Marsilia."
I had no idea who he was, but Stefan did. He froze where he sat, all of his being focused on the vampire and the bloody gauntlets. Stefan's face was blank, as if the whole world had tilted from its axis. Marsilia smiled.
"Tell me, did Bernard approach you to betray me?"
"Yes," Stefan said without expression.
"Did Estelle do the same?"
He took a deep breath, blinked a couple of times, and relaxed in the chair.
"Bernard seemed to have the seed's best interest at heart," he said.
"Truth,"
Wolf said.
"But Estelle, when she asked me to join her against you, Estelle just wanted power."
"Truth."
Estelle shrieked and tried to get to her feet, but she couldn't move away from Wolf.
"And what did you tell them?" she asked.
"I told them I wouldn't make a move against you."
Stefan sounded utterly weary, but somehow his words carried over the noise Estelle was making.
"Truth," declared Wolf.
Marsilia looked at the gauntlet-wearing vampire, who sighed and bent to Estelle. He petted her hair a couple of times until she quieted. We all heard the crack.
when her neck broke. He took his time separating her head from her body. I looked away and swallowed hard.
"Bernard," Marsilia said, "we believe it would be good if you return to your maker until you learn the habit of loyalty."
Bernard stood up.
"It was all a trick," he said, his voice incredulous. "All a trick. You killed Stefan's people, knowing he loved them. You tortured him, all to catch Estelle and me in our little rebellion. A rebellion born from the heart of your own André."
Marsilia said,
"Yes. Don't forget that I set up his little favorite, Mercedes, to be the lever I needed to move the world. If she hadn't killed André, if he hadn't helped her cover it up, then I could not have sent him out from the seed. Then I could not have used him to witness against you and Estelle. Had you been of my making, disposing of you would have been much easier and cost me less."
Bernard looked at Stefan, who was sitting as if it would hurt to move, his head slightly bent.
"Stefan, of all of us, was loyal to the death. So you tortured him, killed his people, threw him out, because you knew that he'd refuse us, that his loyalty was such that despite what you had done to him, he'd still remain yours."
"I counted on it," she said. "By his refusal, your rebellion is robbed of its legitimacy."
She looked at the man who'd killed Estelle.
"You, of course, had no idea that your children would behave so."
He gave her a small smile, one predator to another.
"I'm not on the chair."
He pulled off the gauntlets and tossed them into Wolf's lap.
"Not even by such a slim connection."
His hands were bloodied, but I couldn't tell if it was from one wound or many.
"I've heard your truths, and can only hope you'll find them as galling as I." "Come, Bernard," he said. "It is time for us to leave."
Bernard rose without protest, shock and dismay in every line of his body. He followed his maker to the doorway, but turned back before leaving the room entirely.
"God save me," he said, looking at Marsilia, "from such loyalty. You have ruined him for your whim. You are not worthy of his gift, as I told him."
"God won't save any of us," said Stefan in a low voice. "We are all of us damned."
He and Bernard stared at each other across the room. Then the younger vampire bowed and followed his maker out the door. Stefan pulled his hands free and stood up.
"Stefan," said Marsilia, sweet-voiced. But before she finished the last syllable, he was gone.
Chapter 10 Marsilia froze for a moment, staring at the place Stefan had been. Then she looked at me, a look of such malevolence I had to work not to step back, even though there was half of a very large room between us. She closed her eyes and brought her features back under control.
"Wolf," she asked, "do you have it?"
"I do, mistress," the vampire said.
He stood up and drifted over to her, pulling an envelope out of his back pocket. Marsilia looked at it, bit her lip, then said in a low voice,
"Give it to her."
Wolf altered his path so he came more directly to us. He handed me the envelope that was none the worse for the time it had spent in his pocket. It was heavy paper, the kind that wedding invitations or graduation announcements are engraved on. Stefan's name was gracefully lettered across the front. It was sealed with red wax that smelled like vampire and blood.
"You will give this to Stefan," Marsilia said. "Tell him there is information here, not apologies or excuses."
I took the envelope and felt a strong desire to crumple it and drop it on the floor. "Bernard is right," I said. "You used Stefan, hurt him, broke him in order to play your little game. You don't deserve him." Marsilia ignored me.
"Hauptmann," she said with calm courtesy, "I thank you for your warning about the Blackwood. In return for this, I accede to your truce. The signed documents will be sent to your house."
She took a deep breath and turned from Adam to me.
It is the judgment of this night that the action you took against us, killing Andre, has not resulted in damage to the seed. That you had no intention of moving against the seed was borne out by your truth-tested testimony.
She sucked in a breath.
It is my judgment that the seed suffered no harm, and you are not an ally turned traitor. No further punishment will be taken against you, and the crossed bones will be removed.
She glanced down at her wrist.
I can do it tonight, said Wolf in gentle tones.
She nodded.
Removed before dawn.
She hesitated, then said in a quiet voice, as if the words were pulled from her throat.
This is for Stefan. If it were up to me, your blood and bones would nourish my garden, Walker. Take care not to push me again.
She turned on her heel and left out the same door Bernard had taken. Wolf looked at Adam.
Allow me to escort you out of the seethe so that no harm comes to you.
Adam lowered his eyelids.
Are you implying I cannot protect my own?
Wolf dropped his eyes and bowed low.
But of course not, merely suggesting that my presence might save you the trouble, and save us the mess to clean up afterward.
Fine.
Adam led the way. I let the other wolves pass me, and tried not to be hurt when Mary Jo and Aurieli deliberately avoided looking at me. I didn't know what cause, or rather which cause, was bothering them. Coyote, vampire prey, or causing Marsilia to target the pack. It didn't matter, really. There was nothing I could do about any of it. Warren, Samuel, and Daryl waited until the others were gone. Then Warren gave me a little smile and went ahead. Daryl paused, and I looked at him. I outranked him, which put me at the end of the pack, to protect us from attack from behind. Then he smiled, a warm expression I couldn't say I'd ever seen on his face. Not directed at me, anyway. And he went ahead.
Oh, no, you don't, said Samuel, amused. I'm outside the pack, and so I can tag along with you.
I really need a good night's sleep, I told him as I fell into step beside him.
I guess that's what comes from fraternizing with vampires.
He put a hand on my shoulder. A cold hand. I'd been so busy sweating with fear, I'd become accustomed to both the feeling and the smell. I hadn't noticed that Samuel was scared, too. The last time he'd come here, Lily had taken him for a snack, and Marsilia had done worse, robbing him of his will until he was hers. For me, it would have been terrifying. I couldn't imagine what it would feel like to a werewolf who lived only because he controlled his wolf, all the time. I reached up and put my hand over his. "Let's get out of here," I said. And all the way through the room, I was conscious of the two still bodies on the floor, and of the vampires and their menageries, who sat silently on the bleachers, obedient to orders I couldn't hear. They watched us leave with their predatory eyes, and I felt them on my back all the way to the door, just like the ghost in the bathroom at Amber's house. I sat shotgun in the Suburban Adam had driven over. I didn't know if it was a rental or a new vehicle, which is what it smelled like. Paul, Daryl, and Aurieli filled the first back seat. Samuel drove his own car, a nifty new Mercedes in Bing Cherry Red. Mary Jo, who had been heading toward Adam's vehicle until she saw me, abruptly changed directions and got into Warren's old truck. Alec, trailing her around like a lost puppy, followed. "And I thought Bran could be Byzantine," I said finally, trying to relax in the safety of the leather upholstery as Adam drove through the gates.
"I didn't catch it all," said Daryl.
He must have been tired, because his voice was even deeper than usual, buzzing my ears, so I had to listen closely to catch all of his words.
"For some reason she had to convince Stefan that he was out of the seethe. Then, when her traitors approached him, he had to refuse their offers before he could witness that they'd made them."
"That's what it sounded like to me," said Adam. "And only with his witness and their maker's consent could she deal with her traitors."
"Makes sense," offered Paul almost shyly.
"The way the seethe works, if he belonged to her, his witness is hers. If those two were imposed on her, she couldn't have them killed at her word. She'd need outside verification."
I wondered if I'd been set up, I thought of Wolf's oh-so-convenient aid when I'd killed Andre. He'd known I was looking for Andre. I'd stumbled upon his resting place before I found Andre's. I thought he kept it from the mistress for his own reasons. But maybe he hadn't. Maybe Marsilia had planned it. My head hurt.
Maybe we were suspecting the wrong vampire of trying to take over Marsilia's seethe, Adam said.
I thought about the vampire who had been Bernard's maker and had stood to watch this trial. I didn't want to be sympathetic. I wanted to hate Marsilia cleanly for what she had done to Stefan. But I'd become passing familiar with evil and all its shades. And that vampire, Bernard's maker, set off every alarm that I had. Not that all vampires weren't evil. I wish suddenly that I could say except for Stefan, but I couldn't. I'd met his menagerie, the ones Marsilia had killed, and I knew that for most of them, except for the very few who became vampire, Stefan would be their death. Still, the other vampire had hit pretty high on my coyote's get-me-out-of-here scale. There had been something in his face.
Makes me glad I'm a werewolf,
said Daryl.
All I have to worry about is when Warren will lose his self-control and challenge me. Warren's self-control is very good, said Adam. I wouldn't wait dinner on his losing it.
Better Warren is a second than a coyote in the pack, said Aurieli tightly.
The atmosphere in the car changed. Adam's voice was soft.
Do you think so? Really?
Daryl warned.
I think so.
Her voice brooked no argument. She was a high school teacher, Daryl's mate, which made her not precisely third in the pack, that was Warren, but second and a half, just below Daryl. If she had been a man, I didn't think she would have ranked much lower. Unlike vampires, wolves tend to be straightforward critters, I murmured, trying not to feel hurt. Rejection for a coyote raised by wolves was nothing new. I'd spent most of my adulthood running from it. I wouldn't have thought that exhaustion and hurt was a recipe for epiphany, but there it was. I'd left my mother in Portland before she could tell me to go. I'd lived alone, stood on my own 2 feet, because I didn't want to learn to lean on anyone else. I'd seen my resistance to Adam as a fight for survival, for the right to control my own actions instead of a life spent following orders because I wanted to obey. The duty that Stefan clung to with awful stubbornness was the life I'd rejected. What I hadn't seen was that I had been unwilling to put myself in a place where I could be rejected again. My mother had given me to Bran when I was a baby, a gift he returned when I became inconvenient. At 16, I'd moved back in with my mother, who was married to a man I'd never met, and had 2 daughters who hadn't known of my existence until Bran had called my mother to tell her he was sending me home. They had been all that was loving and gracious, but I was a hard person to lie to.
Mercy?
Just a minute, I told Adam. I'm in the middle of a revelation. No wonder I hadn't just rolled over at Adam's feet like any sensible person would when courted by a sexy, lovable, reliable man who loved me. If Adam ever rejected me, I felt a low growl rise in my throat.
You heard her, said Daryl, amused. We'll have to wait for her revelation. We have a prophet for our alpha's mate.
I waved at him irritably, then looked up at Adam, whose eyes were, quite properly, on the road. Do you love me? I asked him, pulse pounding in my ears. He gave me a curious look. He was Wolf. He knew intensity when he heard it.
Yes, absolutely.
You'd better, I told him, or you'll regret it. I looked over my shoulder at Aurieli, holding the full force of my will close to me. Adam was mine. Mine. And I would take up all the burdens he could give me, even as he did the same with mine. It would be an equal sharing. That meant he protected me from the vampires, and I protected him from what problems I could. I stared at Aurieli, met the predator in her eyes with the one in mine, and after only a few minutes, she dropped her eyes. Suck it up and deal with it, I told her, and I put my head on Adam's shoulder and fell asleep. It was, sadly, not very long before Adam stopped the car. I stayed where I was, half awake, while Daryl, Arielle, and Paul got out of the car. We stayed where we were until I heard Daryl's Subaru fire up and Adam started for home.
Mercy?
Hmm?
I'd like to take you home with me.
I sat up, rubbed my eyes, and sighed. Once I go horizontal, I'm going to be out like a light, I told him. It's been days. I tried to remember, but I was too tired. Several at least since I had a good night's sleep. The sun, I noticed, was brightening in the sky.
That's all right, he said. I just...
Yeah, me too. But I shivered a little. It was all very well and good to get hot and heavy over the phone, but this was real. I stayed awake all the way to his house. An alpha's home is seldom empty, and with the recent troubles, Adam was keeping a guard there, too. When we came in, we were greeted by Ben, who gave us an offhand salute and trotted back downstairs, where there were a number of guest bedrooms. Adam escorted me up the stairs with a hand on the small of my back. I was sick to my stomach, nervous, and found myself taking in deep breaths to remind myself that this was Adam, and all we were going to do was sleep. Repairs were in progress on the hall bathroom. The door was back up, and mostly the hall wall next to it just needed taping, texturing, and painting. But the white carpet at the top of the stairs was still stained with brown spots of old blood. Mine. I'd forgotten about that. Should I offer to have his carpet cleaned? Could blood be cleaned out of a white carpet? And what kind of stupid person puts white carpet in a house frequented by werewolves? Bolstered by indignation, I took a step into his bedroom and froze. He glanced at my face and pulled a T-shirt out of a drawer and threw it at me.
Why don't you use the bathroom first, he said. There's a spare toothbrush in the top right-hand drawer.
The bathroom felt safer. I folded my dirty clothes and left them in a small pile on the floor before pulling on his T-shirt. He wasn't much taller than me, but his shoulders were broad, and the sleeves hung down past my elbows. I washed my face around the stitches in my chin, brushed my teeth, and then just stood there for a few minutes gathering courage. When I opened the door, Adam brushed by and closed the bathroom behind him, pushing me gently into his room to face the bed with its turned-down comforter. There should be only so much terror you can feel in a night. I should have met my limit and then some. And the fear of something that wasn't going to happen, Adam would never hurt me, shouldn't have been enough to register. Still, it took every bit of courage I had to crawl into his bed. Once I was there, though, in one of those odd little psychological twists everyone has, the scent of him in the sheets made me feel better. My stomach settled down. I yawned a few times and fell asleep to the sound of Adam's electric razor. I awoke, surrounded by Adam, his scent, his warmth, his breath. I waited for the panic attack that didn't come. Then I relaxed, soaking it up. By the light sneaking in around the heavy blinds, it was late afternoon. I could hear people moving around the house. His sprinklers were on, valiant defenders of his lawn in the never-ending battle against the sun. Outside, it was probably in the 70s, but his house, like mine since Samuel moved in, had a chill edge to the air that made the warmth surrounding me that much better. Werewolves don't like the heat. Adam was awake, too. So, I said, half embarrassed, half aroused, and, just to round things out, half scared, too. Are you up for a trial run?
A trial run?
He asked, his voice all rumbly with sleep. The sound of it helped a lot with the halves I was feeling, virtually eliminating embarrassed, reducing scared, and pushing aroused up a few notches. Well, yes. I couldn't see his face, but I didn't need to. I could feel his willingness to participate in my trial pressed against my backside. Thing is, I've had different things happen with these stupid panic attacks. If I stop breathing, you could just ignore it. Eventually I start breathing again, or I pass out. But if I throw up, I let him draw his own conclusions.
Quite a mood breaker,
he observed, his face on the back of my neck as he wrapped an arm more fully around me on top of the covers. I tapped his arm with my finger and warned, only half in jest, don't laugh at me.
I wouldn't dream of it. I've heard stories about what happens to people who laugh at you.
I like my coffee without salt, please.
Tell you what, he said, his voice dropping even lower. Why don't we just play for a bit and see how far it gets?
I promise not to be...
Amusement fought with other things in his voice.
Dismayed if you throw up.
And then he slid down in the bed. When I flinched, he stopped and asked me about it. I found I couldn't say anything. There are things you don't tell someone you're still trying to impress. There are other things you don't want to remember, either. Panic tightened my throat.
Shh, he said. Shh.
And he kissed me there, where he'd caused me to shy. It was a gentle, caring touch, almost passionless, and moved on to somewhere less tainted. But he was a good hunter. Adam isn't patient by nature, but his training was very thorough. He worked his way back to the first bad spot and tried again. I still flinched, but I told him a little. And like the wolf he was, he laved the wound in my soul, bandaging it with his care, and moved on to the next. He explored thoroughly, found each mental wound, and a few I didn't know I had, and replaced them with other, better things. And when passion began to grow too wild, too fast,
"So," he murmured, "are you ticklish here?"
Yep, who'd have known it? I looked at my inner elbow as if I'd never seen it before. He laughed, bounced over a little, and made a raspberry noise with his mouth on my belly. My knees jerked up in reflex, and I bopped him on the head with my elbow. "Are you all right?" I pulled away from him and sat up, all desire to laugh gone. Trust me to clobber Adam while we're making out. Stupid, clumsy, idiot me. He took one look at my face, put both arms over his head, and rolled on his back, moaning in agony. "Hey," I said. And when he didn't stop, I poked him in the side. I knew some of his ticklish spots, too. "Stop that. I didn't hit you that hard." He'd been taking lessons from Samuel. He opened one eye.
"How would you know?"
"You have a hard head," I informed him. "If I didn't damage my elbow, I didn't hurt your head."
"Come here," he said, opening his arms wide, eyes glittering with laughter and heat.
I crawled over on top of him. We both closed our eyes for a bit while I made myself comfortable. He ran his hands over my back.
"I love this," he told me, a little breathless and yellow-eyed.
"Love what?" I turned my head and put my ear on his chest so I could hear the pounding of his heart.
"Touching you."
He deliberately ran a hand over my bare butt.
"Do you know how long I've wanted to do this?"
He dug in with his fingers. Tension from the night before had left me tight, and it felt good. I went limp, and if I could have purred, I would have. "Someone looking at us might think we're asleep," I told him.
"You think so? Only if they don't notice my pulse rate. Or yours."
He hit just the right spot, and I moaned.
"Just like Medea," he murmured, "all I have to do is put my hands on you. You can be spittin' mad, and then you lean against me and go all soft and still."
He put his mouth against my ear.
"That's how I know you want me as much as I want you."
His arms were tight around me, and I knew that I wasn't the only one with wounds. "I don't purr as well as Medea," I told him.
"Are you sure about that?"
And he proceeded to show me what he meant. If I didn't ever reach Medea's volume, I came close. By the time he got down to business, there was no room in the inferno he'd made of me for fear or memory. There was only Adam. The next time I woke up, I was smiling. I was alone in the bed, but that didn't matter because I could hear Adam downstairs. He was talking to Jesse. Either they were making lunch, I checked the window shades, dinner, or someone was getting chopped into small bits. Soon I'd start worrying, but for now, the vampires weren't going to kill everyone I knew. They weren't even going to kill me. The sun was up, and matters between Adam and me were right and tight. Mostly. We had a lot of things to talk about. For instance, did he want me to move in? For a night, it was wonderful. But his house wasn't exactly private. Any of his pack could be here on any given day. I liked my home, scruffy as it was. I liked having my own territory. And what about Samuel? I frowned. He was still not whole, and for some reason bunking at my house was helping. With me, he could have a pack, but not be alpha and responsible for everyone. I wasn't sure it would work out so well for him if I moved in with Adam. And I knew it wouldn't work out if he moved over here, too. See? Worrying already. I took a deep breath and let it go. Tomorrow I would worry about Samuel, about Stefan, and about Amber, whose ghost was the least of her problems. I was just going to enjoy today. For the whole day, I was going to be happy and carefree. I slid out of bed and realized I was stark naked, which was only to be expected. But there was no sign of underwear on the floor or in the bedding. I was head and shoulders under the bed when Adam said from the doorway,
"I spy with my little eye something that begins with the letter A."
"I'll spy your little eye and squish it," I threatened. But since the bed hid me, there was a grin on my face. I'm not body shy, not growing up among werewolves. I can fake it so people don't get the wrong idea, but with Adam, it would be the right one. I wiggled the something in question, and he patted it. "I've been smelling whatever you've been cooking, something with lemon and chicken. It's making me hungry, but I can't find my underwear."
"You could go without," he suggested, sitting on the bed just to the right of me.
"Ha," I said, "not in your life, Buster. Jesse and who knows who else are down there. I'm not running around without underwear."
"Who would know?"
he asked. "I would know," I told him, pulling my head out from under the bed, only to see that he had my bright blue panties dangling from a finger.
"They were under the pillow,"
he said with an innocent smile. I snatched them and put them on. Then I hopped up and went to the bathroom where the rest of my clothes were. I dressed, took a step toward the bedroom, and had a flashback. I'd been here, unworthy, soiled, stained. I couldn't face them, couldn't look into their faces because they all knew.
"Shh, shh," Adam crooned in my ear. "That's over. It's over and done with."
He held me, sitting on the bathroom floor with me on his lap, while I shook and the flashback faded. When I could breathe normally again, I sat up with an attempt at dignity. "Sorry," I said. "I thought that last night would have taken care of the flashbacks, the panic attacks. I was cured, right?" I reached up and grabbed a hand towel and wiped my wet face, and found that it just kept getting wet. I'd been so sure everything would be back to normal now.
"It takes longer than a week to get over something like that," Adam told me as if he could read my mind. "But I can help, if you'll let me."
I looked at him, and he ran a thumb under my eyes.
"You'll have to open up, though, and let the pack in."
He smiled, a sad smile.
"You've been blocking pretty ferociously since sometime on the trip back from Spokane. If I were to guess, I expect it was when you let Stefan bite you."
I had no idea what he was talking about, and I guessed it showed.
"Not on purpose," he said.
Somehow I'd slid off his lap and was leaning against the opposite wall. "Not that I know."
"You had a panic attack on the way home," he told me.
I nodded and remembered the warmth of the pack that had pulled me out of it. Remarkable, awesome, and buried under the rest of the events of the past two nights. His lids lowered.
"That's better. A bit better."
He looked up from the floor and focused on me, yellow highlights dancing in his irises. He reached out and touched me just under my ear. It was a light touch, just barely skin to skin. It should have been casual. He laughed a little, sounding just a bit giddy.
"Just like Medea, Mercy,"
he said, dropping his hand and drawing a breath that sounded just a little ragged.
"Let me try this again."
He held out his hand. When I put mine in it, he closed his eyes, and I felt a trickle of life, warmth, and health dribbling from his hand to mine. It felt like a hug on a summer's day, laughter and sweet honey. I spread out into it through him, sliding into something I just knew were warm depths that would surround me with... But the pack didn't want me. And the minute the thought crossed my mind, the trickle dried up, and Adam jerked his hand back with a hiss of pain that brought me up to my knees. I reached out to touch him, then pulled my hand back so I didn't hurt him again. "Adam?"
"Stubborn," he said with an appraising look. I got bits and pieces from you, though. We don't love you, so you won't take anything from us?
The question in his voice was self-addressed, as if he weren't quite sure of his analysis. I sat back down on my heels, caught by the accuracy of his reading.
Instincts drive the wolf. Coyote, too, I imagine,
he told me after a moment. He looked relaxed, one knee up and the other stretched out just to the side of me.
Truth is without flourishes or manners and runs with a logic all its own. You can't let the pack give without giving in return, and if we don't want your gift...
I didn't say anything. I didn't understand how the pack worked, but the last part was right. After a bit, he said,
It's inconvenient sometimes to be a part of the pack. When the pack magic is in full swing, like now with the moon close to her zenith, there's no hiding everything from each other all the time like we do as humans. Some things, yes, but we can't choose which ones stay safely secret. Paul knows I'm still angry with him over his attack on Warren.